The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you once again. And Phil, the games that Marquette had to win are behind us. Marquette won those, began the gauntlet. The gauntlet is underway, and the gauntlet is off to a great start with a win over Seton Hall. How are you feeling about your Golden Eagles right now?
First of all, I can't find optimistic Phil. He's out in the wild somewhere, just completely gone off the rails in excitement. He's on a 7-day cocaine bender. Who knows where he is? But I'm certainly feeling not only quite good, but definitely better than whatever aneurysm Kevin Willard is currently experiencing.
You know, I said on last week's pod that I just hoped for a tight game that would add a little animosity to this Marquette Seton Hall rivalry, if that's what you want to call it. And well, that's kind of what we got.
The basketball gods have given with both hands.
Yes, they have. Damn shame to see Seton Hall lose a game on a tough call from the referees. Just, you really hate to see that. Just breaks my heart.
Right. I'm devastated for them.
Crying all weekend over it. But hey, look. Did Marquette benefit from a tough call at the end? Yes. Are we going to apologize about it? Nope.
Absolutely not.
Even a little bit. I do not care at all. Yes, it was a tough call on Aiken. Even though he did hack Greg on the arm literally 1 second before the foul was drawn, so Greg should have been going to the line anyway. And Seton Hall fans, yes, they were flooding Twitter with tears over it, but including like some Seton Hall like writers,
right?
But let's not act like Seton Hall didn't get any calls in that game. And yes, the officiating was an abomination, which is really what we've come to expect from Big East officiating in general, college basketball officiating in general. But yeah, I would like to apologize to absolutely no one. I'll take the win and just run with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the whole week, right? Like, I think, and we'll get to more details of some of the each of the games, but like the whole week was for me. I think it was just a cleansing, a full cleanse of the Wojo era, right? Like people when they're dieting or whatever will, you know, I don't know, they build a shake out of peppers and drink that like six times a day or whatever and do that for multiple days. This the week that was just a cleanse for me from the Wojo era. All of the like bad juju that we have come to expect. Again, not to say that we couldn't lose or have bad games in the future, but you know, the DePaul game, that first half against DePaul was unquestionably a typical Marquette against DePaul half. But then the second half was entirely about Marquette stretching a lead. Could they have won by 30? Sure, they could have tried. They only won by 11. Darn. But they still won convincingly against DePaul, right? They played a Seton Hall game tight. They came out strong. Seton Hall fought back, got the lead. Even at you know, I was watching on tape delay, but at the 4 minute mark, I turned to the wife character and was like, oh my God, they're gonna lose this game. She's like, just watch the damn game. And you know, and like, and then they came back, they won, they got a call in their favor, right? Whether it was the right call or not, who's to say? But it was the right result, I'll tell you that much. But again, I just feel like it's all these things that we've become used to from the Wojo era that went the other way, and it's like, oh, this is what competent, confident basketball looks and feels like. I enjoy this.
Took care of business in the games they had to against Providence, Georgetown, DePaul. Got it done in a home game against Seton Hall. The game started off with just a hot shooting on both sides. Nobody could miss. And then just turned into a rock fight in the second half. And then get a call at the end and win the game. But I definitely agree with what you're saying, is how we kind of got used to nice win followed by a letdown, with hope ultimately being crushed by a loss to DePaul is kind of the way things would generally go. And Yeah, there's a long way to go here, and Marquette won the games it was supposed to win, so that's good. Now, as we said last week, a gauntlet begins with 7 games against ranked teams. I guess Seton Hall's not technically ranked now, but still 7 games that Marquette would be underdogs in, and you win the first one.
Yep.
So we said last week, we kind of ballparked it, and Alan Bukowski, who does bracketology for Crack Sidewalks, kind of backed it up, saying, look, if they can go 2-5 in this stretch, they're going to put themselves in a position to make the tournament. And yeah, if they were to go 3-4 in that stretch, they would be in amazing shape. But we kind of set the bar, manage this 7-game gauntlet at 2-5, you will probably have a chance to play your way in with some manageable games down the stretch and have a good shot to make the tournament. So when you set it at 2-5 and you win the first one, so now it's down to going 1-5 in this next 6, which, the way the team is playing, sounds manageable. Yes, the competition is about to step up, especially this week against Villanova. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But the team is improving, which is another thing that's refreshing. Paint Touches had a great thread on Twitter today talking about the old cliche of trusting the process and the way this new coaching staff has been adjusting. Has some great stuff in there. I'm not going to read the whole thing for you, but if you're on Twitter, find Paint Touches on Twitter and find his thread about trusting the process. And just to summarize it a little bit, the way the team has improved, particularly in two areas, transition and pick and roll, tempo and pick and roll, and like how the points per possession have improved, shot selection has improved. For example, on one stat he threw out there, on unguarded spot-ups, in non-conference, 1.03 points per possession, which is one of the worst in the country, now up to 1.67 points per possession in conference play. Probably playing above their heads a little bit there, but the fact is that is number one. That's about right. As good as it gets. So they are optimizing shots. They have been improving. They have been clearly watching film and learning from it and taking things from it, not just saying, all right, we're going to do the same thing again, but we're going to do it better. They have been obviously been watching what they've been doing and saying, you know what? Some of this isn't working. Let's make some adjustments. And yes, the adjustments came against lesser teams in some spots, particularly against Georgetown and DePaul. But the adjustments have shown results, which is the most encouraging thing for me as Marquette heads forward into this really tough stretch of games in the Big East.
Yeah, and I think that's another one of the items amongst the cleanse, right? Like the in-season improvement going from, hey, we're at point A at the start of the season to we're now at point F in, you know, midway through the season. You can see the growth in the team. You can see, you know, I think some of the previous commentary, you know, Tyler Kolek is taking less dribbled threes and focusing more on set shot threes, right? Or not shooting threes at all, right? Is focusing on the passing. You can see Justin Lewis's shot selection change. You can see them adapting in the moment, right? Daryl Morcel was huge in that Seton Hall game, and he took advantage of matchups, whereas I think in previous administrations, we would have just seen hammer it to Justin, right? And so I think we're seeing a lot of those trends kind of really showing up, which is super beneficial. And I think it bodes well for what we have going forward. Because even, you know, I don't think we believe in moral losses or, you know, moral victories or whatever. But the games we lost against UCLA, Xavier, Connecticut, Creighton, you could see what this team was becoming. They couldn't get over that hump. But generally speaking, they're starting to progress to the point where it's like, hey, I think they're going to win the games they're supposed to win. And that wasn't always the case in the past.
Yeah, I feel good about that. It's, you know, even if they do take their lumps over the next 3-4 weeks here, that this team will bounce back in those final 6 games where you go from playing all these ranked teams to you play Butler twice, you got a home game against Georgetown. At Creighton is the toughest game of the last 6, and then you get DePaul again in the House of Horrors, and then a home game against St. John's to close the season, and there's always the possibility that the makeup against St. John's could come somewhere. I think people have pointed out the one date that might make sense, not to get too off topic, but would be Thursday, February 10th, because that's a week when Marquette is at Connecticut and could conceivably kind of stay on the East Coast 2 days later, play St. John's. St. John's just has two games that week, I think. And it is conceivable that that seems the only logical day where they could. There's been no announcement made, and I think they're probably holding off anyway because there could be more games canceled or more games moved. But that might be the only place that you could make up that.
I'm actively considering some sort of sabotage that prevents that St. John's game from being rescheduled. Like, if I have to go take out a transformer in the arena where the game is going to be played when it's rescheduled, I will do so.
Oh, well. They'll know where to find you then.
Yeah. Wait, this isn't in an audio medium which can be used against me in a court of law, is it?
Inadmissible in court.
Hold on. I will edit in when I edit the pod. I will edit heavily edited me saying hypothetically before everything I just said. Okay, so we're good.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck with that. But back to what we're saying, yeah, the progress the team seems to make. I think there's a certain confidence in this team, and yes, they're still a young team, but the young guys are learning and kind of settling into their roles. All these new players, where you know the first month or two, maybe obviously the rotations were far from set, and guys were, you know, not sure if are we starting, or are we coming off the bench? Are we coming off the bench and getting starters minutes? Are we just getting spot minutes? And I think everybody probably has a good sense of how much they're going to play and what their role is supposed to be. And the evolution on offense, which has allowed, you know, some of these stats that were concerning in the preseason or in the non-conference play actually looking pretty good. And we talked a lot about the poor three-point shooting, right, in the first month to 6 weeks of the season when they were shooting something around 30-31% of the team, which is kind of bad. Now that as a team, it's up to 34% for three-point shooting, and that's coming obviously from more quality shots, like
right.
Quality looks, more uncontested threes. And hey, if you limit it to just Big East play, they're shooting 38.7 from three, which is an outstanding number as a team. That ranks second in the Big East. They're number one in the Big East play in two-point field goal percentage at 53%. So that obviously comes from paint touches. Tyler Kolek being able to get into the paint, get it to the big men, and whether it's Oso or Kerr, they're usually getting good looks and easy buckets, or they're kicking it back out to guys who now have more wide open threes, and they're hitting them as a team at a much higher clip than they were in the non-conference play, especially some guys like Morcell's come back. Around, you know, Kolek is still struggling from three. He's not there, but Cam Jones, you know, when he's open, he's hitting them pretty good clip. And Omax has also turned into a guy who, when he takes a three, especially if it's a wide open three, you're pretty good with it. Whereas maybe back in November when he was taking threes, maybe you kind of cringed a little bit. But you know, he's a guy when he's lined up with an open three, you're probably like, yeah, that's a good shot.
Right. Right. Well, and yeah, so the offense has come a long way and it's starting to come together. I mean, we used to joke in the Buzz era about, you know, the offense will be installed on Thursday or whatever. You know, so there may be a little bit of that where the team is just maturing in the offensive side of things at a little bit slower rate than the defense was. But I mean, not to make this all seashells and rainbows and excitement, but I mean, they kind of have to make all these shots because their rebounding is pretty terrible, right? Like, so they're not getting a lot of second chance points.
No, the offensive rebounding is a problem that's probably not going away.
Right. Yeah, with the defensive rebounding, but you know, we'll get to that. But yeah, it's not going to solve itself.
Yeah, especially that Seton Hall game. I mean, as that game went along, you kind of felt if Marquette was going to lose, it was probably going to be on putbacks.
Yes.
And Seton Hall just throwing it in there because Seton Hall absolutely dominated that game on their offensive glass, Marquette's defensive glass. But yeah, I don't see this team becoming a great rebounding team before the season's over. That's just going to be a flaw that we're just going to have to live with, and you know, hope the team plays good enough defense that maybe they can force turnovers and just hopefully the ball bounces their way when the other team misses.
Yeah, correct. And that was, you know, it's anecdotal, but I feel like that Seton Hall game was an example of like the most ever like fourth, fifth, and sixth chances I've seen, right? Like, so rebounding, you know, especially defensive rounding is going to be a problem.
There were some possessions where I felt Seton Hall had it for like 3 minutes.
Yes.
There were some that seemed that long.
Well, it felt like, and I don't know, and we'll get to this in the Take My Money. I don't know how exactly we're counting the kills. Like, every time they get an offensive rebound and miss a shot, does that count as a stop? Or is it like, is a stop to change the possession?
It's not, unfortunately, because if it is, yeah, they must have had like 1,000 kills. But right. I think that was the Take My Money. But no, they didn't get quite enough kills in that one. But yeah.
But I mean, again, so like there are certainly things to improve on. But I think the important takeaway from the improve on is like that the team is getting better, right? Like, so not everything is getting better. Obviously, the rebounding is questionable at best. But the offense generally is improving. The defense is solid to becoming, you know, great. We are on the cusp of becoming a top 40 KenPom defense, which, you know, and we have been in conference play, have been the number one defense. And I am like just overjoyed at that. I don't know. I was not prepared for how excited a defense first team was going to make me, but I am like loving it.
Yeah, on KenPom now, Marquette, 61st offense in the country as we record this on Tuesday, 44th defense in the country. Effective field goal percentage on defense, really good, 42nd in the country. Effective field goal percentage on offense, not bad, 52.2. That ranks 87th in the country, so that's been climbing quite a bit. And, yeah, we talk about red numbers and green numbers all the time, green being good, above average, and red being below average, with the deep red being really bad. A lot of green numbers right now. The only numbers that really are bad are the rebounding numbers. Marquette's offensive rebounding ranks 301st in the country. Their defensive rebounding, so their opponent's offensive rebounding percentage, is 294th in the country. So those are the only spots when you look at the four factors where Marquette is pretty bad. But as far, and you know, they don't get to the line very much, but that's the least important of the four factors, is getting to the free throw line. And you know, that was something that we kind of toyed with, maybe being the Take My Money for Seton Hall, was getting to the free throw line. And I backed out of it just because Marquette has been winning without getting to the free throw line. And I just, I guess my thought is that they don't really have guys who are excellent at driving into contact and getting the foul.
Right.
Like most of the Marquette's players, when they drive into the bigs and try to get that contact, usually they're getting their shots blocked and they're not getting those calls. So I think that's why I backed off the free throw, because the getting to the free throw line, which we talked about last week, because I just didn't think it would be a key to success. Now, ultimately, what I ran with was kills. That didn't work out either. They didn't get enough kills. So I think the Take My Money count is still at 7 for the year. But you know, would we love to see Marquette get to the free throw line more? Yes, but I definitely don't want to see them drastically change the way they attack on offense to get to the free throw line, because I think what they've been doing has been successful. So, yeah, I can understand if improving that free throw rate is not a priority, because I'm not sure you need it. I mean, it would be nice, but it's not critical.
Yeah, well, and one thing that's interesting is there's kind of been a truism that I think has been a holdover from the Buzz days. One of Buzz's axioms was he wanted to make more free throws than the other team attempted. And you know, I haven't done exhaustive research, but I that hasn't held true for Marquette. Marquette has been winning even without significant three free throw makes. I mean, heck, the Georgetown game, was 3x Marquette's free throw attempts in three free throws made. And obviously we know how that game turned out, right? And the Seton Hall game, I gotta find it right here. I had it in front of me and then it disappeared on me. You know, in the Seton Hall game, Marquette made 12 free throws, attempted 16, whereas Seton Hall made 16 and attempted 23, right? So the axiom would hold that, hey, Seton Hall should have won because they made as many free throws as we attempted. But we made the one that mattered.
And the rest screwed Ray, and the rest screwed Seton Hall, right?
Well, absolutely. Hold on. Let's pour one out for the Seton Hall fans who are just getting home from delivering pizzas. sorry, I will not stop. I will stoke the fires of this rivalry or this hate, whatever.
Throw that gas on the flames.
I will do nothing but troll Seton Hall fans for the next 9 days. Be that as it may, right? Like, I mean, every bone in my body says we need to get to the free throw line more. We didn't get to the line as much as we needed to against Seton Hall. We didn't get to the line as much as we needed to against DePaul. But they're still winning, so, you know, what the hell do I know, right? Like, I think there will be a game where our lack of getting the other team into foul trouble or our inability to rebound will absolutely 100% cost us a game. But I don't know that it's going to cost us games, plural, or like, you know, like, will consistently cost us games. Like, if we lose multiple games, it will because other parts didn't compensate for the lack of free throws and the rebounding.
Yeah, you want to have it all, but you can't have it all. Right. So you got to pick and choose where you're good and maybe just to kind of accept the flaws. Yeah, you would love to be a team that does everything right. That is a great shooting team, a great rebounding team that forces a lot of turnovers, that gets to the free throw line, that makes all their free throws. You know, that's what we call a Final Four team.
Correct. And that is not this team. We may be optimistic, but we are not that team.
Yeah, like, you know, that's probably describing a team like Auburn or Gonzaga right now.
Right, or Villanova.
But I agree with you that, yeah, maybe ultimately whenever Marquette's season ends, whether they're knocked out of the Big East tournament and don't make the big dance, or they're in the tournament and they lose to maybe a superior team, maybe something like not getting enough free throws or their poor rebounding will be the reason they ultimately lose and don't go far in the tournament. I could see that. But I also agree with what you're saying there that what Marquette does well, if they keep doing it well, and that is creating paint touches, creating high percentage shots for the big guys, hitting wide open threes and creating more space for Marquette's okay but not great outside shooters to get open looks and uncontested threes, therefore they're more likely to go in. Those things, continue doing those things well, Marquette should win the games it is supposed to win. And I think that's the key. That's really all we're looking for from this team the rest of the way. If they win the games they're supposed to win, it looks like they have a decent shot to be in the tournament.
Yeah. Well, all right. Let's before we get to the week ahead, there's cause for both optimism and pessimism across the next 12 games. And I think you provide a good pivot point for a little bit of discussion around that. Because so if we look at it, the next six games are undoubtedly a gauntlet. The final six games are whatever the opposite of a gauntlet is. I don't know, wide open prairie land. I don't know whatever the metaphor is.
But a relaxing river cruise.
Correct. So if you look at it just from a KenPom ranking, a moment in time, the next six games we average our opponents average a KenPom ranking of 20.5. Okay, that's. That's high. That's that, you know, you're basically averaging a top 25 team every game for the next six games. You know, so that's going to be a challenge. Now, the cause for pessimism. In our losses this season, the average KenPom ranking has been 32.5. So, you know, that says, hey, we're facing a tougher set of six games than we faced, you know, in all of our losses that we lost. So, yeah, I mean, it's not great to go win the next six or much in the next six. But again, the team is trending better than they were. I mean, quite frankly, nobody, you know, it's tough to talk about it, but we're a fouling up three against Creighton away from being, you know, 5-2 in conference, right? And
yeah.
And you know, really being on the good side of being, you know, if we foul up three against Creighton, I would argue we are right now talking about season or seeding, not in or out, right?
We'd be around that vein. Yeah, if you look at bracket matrix right now, maybe obviously it's still early, but it's not so early that it's ridiculous to talk about the tournament.
Right.
You know, bracket matrix right now, Marquette is a strong 10 bordering on a 9 seed if you look at kind of the averages of all the brackets out there. So that's on the good side of the bubble. I would even, you might even say not even on the bubble, but comfortably in. Now you lose 6 straight or you lose 5 out of 6, you're probably on the other side of
right,
it.
Right,
but,
right.
But I would agree with you. Yeah, so let's say hypothetically you win that game against Creighton. I'm sure if I went to T-Rank right now, I could punch in that math and see what it says, but I just don't want – that's just
– I think when I did it, we were ranked 7 or whatever. But so, again, yeah, so, there's reason for pessimism over the next 6 games. But the last 6 games, the KenPom opponent ranking is 108. And our average, if you eliminate the bye games, right, like take out Edwardsville, New Hampshire, Northern Illinois, and Jackson State. If you just look at the you know, what we'll say the tier one, tier two kind of opponents in our victories. So the average KenPom ranking for the last 6 games is 108. In our victories, our average KenPom opponent was 70.1. So, you know, it's kind of one of these where, you know, we should expect to go 500 over the balance of the season. Like, that is the minimum, right? So I think this team can do that, right? It's going to be tough. We're going to have 2 or 3 weeks here where we're going to really doubt or question ourselves. But
yeah, it's
but it shapes
yeah, like
up
the
to
X
be
factor
good.
Is do they get off the mat after let's say they lose 6 straight. Are they totally deflated and defeated after those losses, or do they get off the mat and like they did after that Creighton loss, which is, you know, to maybe a lesser team, devastating, and maybe some other team quits after that Creighton loss, after their 4th loss in a row and in devastating fashion. But they got off the mat in a big way and blew out Providence, blew out Georgetown, comfortable win over DePaul, and then was able to grind out a win against Seton Hall. So that's kind of my question is, once they get through this stretch of games, if they do take their lumps, are they still encouraged and are they still optimistic? And I think Shaka's done a pretty good job of that with his team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, even look at the 4-game or I mean, hell, the 5 out of 6 losing games prior to the start to this winning streak, right? They lost Wisconsin on the road. Beat Kansas State on the road in a very tight game, then lost to UCLA, Xavier, Connecticut, Creighton, right? But each of those games, you could argue, was, hey, this is going to knock them out, right? And again, this is part of my Wojo cleanse theme, right? Those that Xavier game or that Connecticut game where we were within one possession with 2 minutes to go and lost those games, those would have altered our entire, like, paradigm in the previous administration. Whereas you see, you know, lost to UCLA, horrible first 15 minutes shooting, fought back. Lost to Xavier, but fought back. Lost to Connecticut, fought back. Right. So this team stays in the fight, right? And that's and plays with violence. All the themes Wojo talks about, or excuse me, that Shaka talks about, that like there's no evidence that's going away. So even when we have to play a Villanova, a Xavier, a Seton Hall again, you know, Villanova and Connecticut, I kind of discount Providence, right? Like, we could lose to Providence, right? They're a top 50 KenPom team, but I kind of feel Providence is a little bit smoke and mirrors, so there's at least one more out of the 6 maybe we can win. But I think this team will be in the fight, and the key is, from an analytics standpoint, you want to lose small and win big. So if we can keep, right, even if we lose these 6 games, if we can keep those tight, less than double-digit losses in each of those games, and then when it turns around and we're facing the likes of Butler twice, Georgetown, Creighton again, DePaul again, eventually St. John's, and win those game by double digits, from the analytics perspective, from the kind of surface level, hey, 6 in a row, like this really shapes up to be in very good shape come seeding time. But you know, what would really make us comfortable and truly get us off that team bubble watch is at least one win out of the next 6. 2, man, we are set.
Yeah, I'd agree. And, you know, the home game on Sunday against Xavier on KenPom is just a 1-point spread, so that's right, a gettable game.
Yep.
Projected to get blown out by Villanova, like you were just saying, let's keep that one close, right? Let's not, you know, let's... who did Villanova beat by 40 this week? Was it
Creighton? Yeah, it was Creighton.
Yeah. Butler. It was Butler. They beat by 40.
Don't lose by
40. But if you know if you're competitive with Villanova, that's fine. And they've been competitive. The only game where they've really just gotten their doors blown off was St. Bonaventure, and even that, analytically, I mean, they got it down to 16 before the final buzzer sounded. And you know their other games. I guess you know Wisconsin got away from them a little bit, and it felt one-sided. But that's makes me vomit in my mouth a little bit. But a top five team in the country at the moment. All the other games have been single digits. So yeah, competitive with Villanova. Xavier at home is gettable. Seton Hall on the road, it's probably going to be a tough one to get, but that's a 6-point spread on KenPom. Providence on the road, that's a 3-point spread. Villanova at home, it's happened before, but 6-point dog on that one, according to KenPom. At Connecticut, 7-point spread. So if you're going to get another one, I would say, honestly, Xavier at home on Sunday is, at least according to KenPom, that's the most likely one.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that maybe Providence is gettable too, just because what we said before the first Providence game, their numbers might be a little inflated considering who they've beaten and the condition of those teams when they played them. So that may be another one Marquette could, if you're looking to get greedy here and trying to get three out of these seven, at Providence would be another one. If I have to pick another one, that would be the next one I would pick after Xavier at home.
Yeah, I agree. I think Xavier and Providence are the two I have scheduled. Not necessarily. Well, we'll get to my Xavier prediction here shortly, but not to you know forecast or whatever. But like Xavier and Providence are definitely out of the next six are the two most gettable. That's not to say they couldn't win any of the others, but it's just you know Connecticut and Villanova are very good teams, right? And that is just going to be a challenge. Seton Hall is a good team, right? Like, they may be coached by an asshat and, you know, filled with a bunch of whining fans who, you know, need to go deliver more pizzas. But they are a good... Yes, they are... I will not stop. They are a good team with a lot of talent on the roster, right? So losing to Seton Hall, Villanova twice, and Connecticut... while disappointing is not unexpected. So you got to play with your heads high throughout, get through this challenge. I think this is where Shaka's culture of stay in the fight or get lost in the fight, excuse me, and play with violence really comes to bear, right? Like, are you getting intimidated or frustrated or challenged by the fact that we're playing a group of teams here that's really going to put Marquette on its heels at times? Or are you just saying, hey, look, let's do what we do. Let's see where the chips fall. And as long as we have played in our style, in our manner, whatever we get, right? I think as a fan, we just have to hope for that. And as a program, I think Shaka's entire culture has been building to that. They are built for this next six game stretch.
I think so too. So the question is, how does it go? So we start with Villanova this week. That's the game on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central. It is at Nova, and it is at the Pavilion, which is a place where Villanova is dang near unbeatable.
Yep.
Especially when it comes to Marquette. So, you know, if when you're going game by game, Phil, and you're projecting wins and losses, at Nova is one you almost always pencil in as a loss. And it's fine with it. You know, you got to win games, but you don't have to win all of them. So, I guess my thing looking at this Villanova game is, like we said a minute, just don't get blown out. Just stay in the fight and make it at least interesting coming down the stretch. And other than that, I really have I'm not putting any expectations on this Villanova game other than just stay in it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think we've seen Villanova in enough games. They are, no doubt, they are very talented. I do think they're a top five type team, right? They've had some, you know, they were trailing DePaul in the first half, right, and eventually blew them out in the second half. They have moments where they don't shoot very well or they're not effective. So I'm going to make a statement. I don't mean it to be like, oh, hey, Marquette is as good as Villanova. I don't think that on paper or in real life. But I think Villanova is a little bit of a, you know, a rich man's version of Marquette, or a billionaire man's version of Marquette, right? Like, I think Villanova has a defense first mentality. The offense can suffer from shooting woes from time to time. I think they're less good at rebounding than say some of the other attributes, right? So I think Villanova does all of the things Marquette does well, just better, and or weller, if you want to put it that way. Let's go better. But they also struggle where Marquette does, but they just don't struggle as much. So I think it'll be a very interesting game, in that it's kind of like equal, like stylistically they're punching at each other as boxers. Just one is a bigger, faster, stronger boxer. So how does Marquette, you know, overcome that? Yeah. Will be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. Obviously, you know, one area that jumps out is, of course, experience.
Yes.
They've got Colin Gillespie, a super senior, Justin Moore is a junior. Brian Antoine, he was a former five-star prospect. He's just finally starting to be healthy and getting to a point where he's actually playing. He's a junior. Jermaine Samuels is a senior. Brandon Slater is a senior. So they have that edge, first of all. And then, yeah, as good as Marquette's been in conference play, Villanova's been better. I mean, Villanova in the Big East has the number one offense and the number one defense on KenPom. They obviously play a much slower pace, but their effective field goal percentage on both offense and defense ranked number two in the Big East in conference play. Overall, they're the number six offense in the country on KenPom, number 13 overall defense. So they're outstanding. Yeah, they've had a couple games where they've been bad, but they've been bad against great teams. The teams that really handle them, they lost to UCLA in overtime. Purdue beat them on a neutral floor. Baylor blew them out. And then they had that one game against Creighton when they couldn't hit anything, and they lost in Omaha. But they've won six games since then, including just an absolute trucking against Butler on Sunday.
Right.
They beat them by 40 points. And so, yeah, Marquette's going into a tough spot here. But I could see where you can get that logic of looking at Villanova and saying, maybe this could be Marquette in 2 years. And even that's saying way too much, right? Because if you're saying that, you're saying Marquette could be a Final Four team in 2 years. And maybe they could be. But maybe that's setting the bar a little high, but I can see where basically Villanova is what you want Marquette to be, right? Like that.
Right.
You want them to have these guys who are 3 or 4 year college players, loaded with experience, who share the ball, who play defense, and just have bought into a culture of winning, which is what Jay Wright has built. So I can kind of see where your logic is going there on Villanova. But as it relates to this game, yeah, Villanova's way better. They're at home. They're playing in the pavilion where they're almost unbeatable. I'm just setting the bar low on this one, and anything better than a blowout loss is something I will walk away satisfied with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as long as they're competitive in this game, I do think it's going to be a loss. This is the game I've kind of circled in the Wojo in the Shaka era of, like, this will tell us
old
about
habits,
this team.
Old habits die hard.
Right, right. Well, unfortunately, I mentioned Wojo more times than I care to in this podcast, so I'll refrain from doing it so far. So I continue to do so in the future. But I think this is the one that's very interesting from a Shaka era, what he has with this team. Again, can this team be competitive against obviously superior team from a roster composition, from an experience standpoint, from a talent standpoint? They're a better team right now in this moment. Does Marquette have the ability to go on the road and play a competitive game of basketball against Villanova? I think they can be competitive. I don't think they win, but I think they can keep it. I still think the final margin of victory is probably going to be double digits, but like 11 or 12, maybe, you know, Villanova pulls away when we're fouling late, or they get a couple of fast breaks because we're pressing to turn them over or something like that. But I do think we lose. I think it'll be a competitive game.
That's why I'm take my money for the Villanova game. By the way, I misspoke earlier. It's at 8 units if you're keeping track for the year. They've hit it 8 times. They got it against DePaul. Did not in the 32 deflections. They did not get it against Seton Hall. I set that at 8 kills. So, but for Villanova, I'm just setting it cover the spread. We'll check it, whatever the line is on Wednesday morning. It'll probably be pretty big. So whatever the spread is, I'm just going to say cover the spread in Vegas.
I like it. It's a good approach.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm setting it. And I'll put a hook on it just so there's no tie. So if the spread is like 10, I'll put it at 10.5.
Okay.
So I don't want to have a tie. So
no one wants to kiss their sister.
I'll tweet out that on Wednesday. But so we're both setting the bar low for Villanova, and that's fine. Now, what about Sunday against Xavier? This is a 1 o'clock Central Time tip. This one's at the Fiserv Forum. Against the Xavier Musketeers, a team that beat Marquette earlier this season at their place, 80-71. What can change about this matchup, Phil, other than the location?
I think the shot selection is going to make a big difference, right? I think Marquette suffered again, and they were in the fight against Xavier, right? They were within one possession with 2 minutes to go. I think this team is just choosing better shots that I think will serve them against a team like Xavier. They will be more efficient with their offense. Xavier is not particularly strong. In fact, they're the only teams worse than Xavier at offensive rebounding are Marquette and Butler. So I don't think Xavier is going to be able to take advantage of our most glaring weakness as much as they might otherwise. So if Marquette can play without fouling and kind of continue their shot selection, I do think I will go as so far as to project that or predict that Marquette will beat Xavier on Sunday. I think this team is playing at another level that will enable them. They might struggle against Villanova, but they're gonna secure a victory against Xavier.
Damn it, Phil. I'm with you.
Yes, get on board. Come on over to Optimistic Phil's side.
I'm going to believe in this team until they give me a reason not to believe in them. And we talked about the opportunities to steal one, and this is the best opportunity in this 7-game stretch to steal a second one. This is a home game against the team you play. Marquette played tight in their place the first time around. Like you said, they were within a possession with, 2 minutes to go, and
yes,
then it just kind of slipped away from them. And I think the improvement they've made on offense, better shot selection, share on the ball, and the way they've been dialing in on defense, I think they can do it. I really do. And as long as they are licking their wounds after that Villanova game, let's get that win on Sunday against Xavier. Marquette they're doing their Hall of Fame induction that
to the M Club
as well. Yep. So hopefully got a nice crowd there. And yeah, what the hell? Let's beat Xavier.
Well, and there's no conflict with the Packers. The Packers play Saturday night, so for those of you inclined to that fandom, the 1 p.m. Sunday afternoon start should fit in just fine.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a good crowd, and again, I think the momentum's building. It will suck a little bit to lose to Villanova if that's what happens, but I still think there's going to be a great crowd. Xavier is, I don't know that they're a great road team. And again, I don't know that they have any strengths where Marquette has glaring weaknesses. So I think Marquette is just a different team. This is almost exactly a month since we last played Xavier. And I think Marquette is I don't want to say a drastically different team, but I think is a significantly improved team compared to the one that kind of almost won in Cincinnati. So I am strongly optimistic on this one.
And yeah, looking back at that that first game, I mean, Omax hadn't hit his stride yet. I mean, that was
right.
The last game, and I would say Omax was probably really quiet and,
yep,
and didn't do much at all. And I think he'll be a bigger factor in this game this time around. And so yeah, let's. I wish I could, I can't. I'm trying to track see what the take my money was last time we played Xavier, and I can't find it. So, but whatever it was, it doesn't look like they got it. So, take my money for Xavier. To be determined. Instead of just stalling in a little bit, I'll think about it a little bit. Leaning just going towards the old standby for 32 deflections.
Leave them wanting more, Joe. You got to leave them coming back to the old Twitter space to find out what you chose.
Yeah, so I'll figure it out after the Villanova game. So, but yeah, so Villanova game is just cover the spread in Vegas. That's what I'm saying on that one. Again, it's 8 hits so far this year. Hopefully 2 more this week, and hopefully a 1-1 week. That's basically what I'm setting the bar for this week. And you're on board too, right? Well, lost Nova, win Xavier.
Yeah, absolutely. 1-1 is what I plan and hope for. 0-2, I'm not going to get rattled. Optimistic Phil will still be here next week if we lose 2.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I would be, it would be, you never like losing 2, but this is in this stretch where Marquette can kind of take a few body blows and hopefully maybe power through. And the Xavier opportunity at home on Sunday is a great opportunity to steal one more, and then you're playing with house money, right? For the next 4.
Right.
For the Seton Hall, Providence, Nova, and UConn games. You're in pretty good shape and really feeling good about making the tournament. Marquette did not get any votes in the recent AP poll, did it? No, it did not.
It did not.
But it is starting to get a little buzz, though. You saw maybe a few people talking about them. I think Seth Davis in his weekly top 25 kind of included them as one of the next few out. Many people who do bracketology have Marquette, I would say comfortably, I use that term loosely, but solidly in the field right now. So they're gaining some traction. And if they go another week where they beat another top 25 team, not that that's the most important thing, but I think the national eyes will continue to turn towards Marquette and at least make note of what they're doing and what Shock is doing. Obviously, there are obviously there are bigger storylines nationwide. With whether you're talking about the top teams in the country, Gonzaga and Auburn, Arizona's got a new coach. They're top 5 in the country. Whatever national title contender you want to talk about, but if you're want to start a bubble conversation or sneaky teams to watch out for as we get towards March, I think Marquette might be one of the teams people are looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I look at this from a season-long kind of floor and ceiling, right? We're not anywhere near the floor. Yes, the wheels could totally fall off and we could be a below 500 team, but, the injury bug could come calling, whatever. But, I don't think we're anywhere near the floor. And we're getting kind of close to what we expected the ceiling to be, right? Like, we kind of said the ceiling was get into the tournament. They're right in that range, right? Like, and there is definitely a path, even if they lose the next 6, there is a path where they're still in, right? So,
oh, absolutely, there is.
Like, I don't know. It's going to suck if we lose, but it's hard to not be optimistic about the future with Shaka and the team, year one, young team, kind of performing like they are. And it's built on, like, not smoke and mirrors, right? It's built on foundational, expandable, expansible type of skill sets and structure that just should have us absolutely giddy for the future of this program.
Absolutely. Let's keep the good vibes going. Hopefully they get 1 win this week. 2 weeks. Oh, boy. Next podcast will be something.
Oh, my God. If they get 2 wins, oh, my God, that's a 17-drink minimum, and we are doing nothing but just screaming excitedly.
Let's just not get too crazy, though. Hoping for 1. We'll see what happens. Hey, hit us up on Twitter with your feedback. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can comment under the podcast posts. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs page, Facebook page, if that is your thing. Phil, have a great week, man. And hope you get to enjoy a win or 2.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. I will be in attendance on Sunday. I'm excited to see the fans there and enthusiastic, and I'm ready to see what's possible on Wednesday. I wanna experience it.
All right, folks. We'll check in with you next week. Seashells and balloons.